How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Here, Monday through Friday, thank you for making us part of your daily routine. Today, that routine follows a Celtics win over the 76ers. Not pretty, but effective. 116-108 in a game Marcus Smart dominated in every phase of the game. And, you know, look, Isaiah Thomas goes out and scores 33 points and is completely overshadowed by Marcus Smart. Here to talk about it with me, John Corrales, is Sam Jam Packard. We are the Rain and Jays. Hashtag it Rain and Jays without the G on Twitter. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. Whatever. During the game, we can talk about things like Marcus Smart. Sam, I don't know what to say about Marcus Smart. He just made every possible quote unquote winning play out there tonight.
Yeah, and it's not that, like, we've seen Marcus Smart do this before, but it's the fact that this is coming after just a really great West Coast road trip for him, where he had some amazing games, especially against Portland and against Dallas. It seems like we've entered peak Marcus Smart. Well, who knows? This is the best we've ever seen Marcus Smart like play consistently. And when you put up a stat line like he did tonight, it's just it's insane. 21 points, 8 steals, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists. Sean Grandy was throwing out some crazy stats. I think this is the first time a Celtic has 8 steals since Rajon Rondo did it. When was that?
March of 2011.
Wow. And then the other crazy stat is he's the first person to put up that stat line, which is 20 points, 8 steals, and 5 assists since Larry Bird. The only two Celtics who have ever done it. So that's pretty good company to be in if you're Marcus Smart.
When you do something as a Celtic that only Larry Bird has ever done, you've had yourself a hell of a game. The most impressive statistic to me is none of that. It's the fact that he, for the second straight game, was directly involved in a player getting ejected after 2 technicals. That's how frustrating he was. Today it was Gerald Henderson at the end when the Sixers were still kind of in that game. The other day it was Dallas and D-Will, both frustrated by Marcus Smart and just losing their shit and twice getting ejections. That is, I've never seen that before. So, I am so completely flabbergasted as we do this show directly after the game. I'm just looking at our notes. Marcus Smart is a menace. Marcus Smart is on fucking fire lately. Marcus Smart is, we're just gushing over Marcus Smart the whole game. Here's the thing about Smart is that he does so many different things, and he's now, I think, now he's in his third season. He has now kind of, I think, figured himself out a little bit. He's much more judicious with his shots, although tonight there were a couple of heat checks. He still shot 43% from 3 of 7. shot 7 of 11 overall. He's getting away from some of the bad shots that he's taking. He's taking better looks, more catch and shoots. He's not really firing off the dribble that much anymore. And he's doing it all while playing a brand of defense that I swear he has got to end up on one of those all-defensive teams. He's got to. He's making such spectacular plays that he is straight ripping the ball out of people's hands at least once a game, that he's just having the absolute best stretch of his career. This entire road trip tonight, this has been the best probably dozen or so games of Marcus Smart's career.
That play with Nick Stauskas where he just basically swallowed him on the floor, just like basically just said, "I'm more of a man than you, and this basketball is mine." I believe they called him FU steals. We called that earlier in the week. But I think the thing, Marcus Smart's been doing that his whole career, kind of being the menace on defense. But when he like actually gets the score, adds the scoring to his game, he just becomes that much more dangerous. And we've seen it in the past three games. It feels like actually looking at his percentages, he's not shooting that much better from 3-point range, but it feels like he is. But the thing that I think is like really making the difference is he's actually finishing around the rim. It feels like he's going up looking to score rather than looking for contact. It's almost as if he realized that he's Marcus Smart. They're not going to call the foul on you, so you better try and score the ball. Because earlier in the season, it seemed like he was going up and just looking for contact and looking to draw the foul, and they would never give it to him, and he'd always end up with kind of a crappy attempt. But his kind of penetrating into the paint has led to a lot of good passes and just nice finishes around the rim, including some nice floaters that I didn't know he had to his game. So it's really just the addition of him kind of being a reliable scorer, someone who can give you more than 15 points, which has made his like responsible for this huge jump.
He's added that floater. He has added the drives to the rim. And like we were saying earlier this season, that, yeah, I think he is going with more of an attack mode to score, like you're saying. But I think part of what we were saying earlier this year was, as long as he keeps doing it, referees are going to catch on and they're going to start giving him the respect. We haven't seen an egregious Marcus Smart flop in a long time. And I think there's a little bit of the respect of the referees that's starting to come around. They see what Marcus Smart is doing going to the rim. They see that he's getting fouled. Tonight he took 7 free throws, which is as many as Isaiah Thomas. So that's a really good sign that he's getting to the line. No, wait, I'm sorry. He took 7 free throws, which was Isaiah Thomas took 13. So I'm sorry. But he's still getting to the line 7 times is still really good for Marcus Smart. So I think a lot of this stuff is starting to come together. And again, third-year player, finding his role, finding his niche. I know that the trade rumors are going to start heating up. There was a rumor before the game. Chris Mannix said on the Celtics broadcast before the game that the interest in Smart has been heating up. But if he keeps making plays like this, the cost to get Marcus Smart is going to go very, very high, because he's 22 years old and he's doing all of this stuff now. He still hasn't figured himself out completely. He's still 4 or 5 years from his actual athletic peak, which is scary. So the Celtics, we know nobody's untouchable, but Marcus Smart, if you're going to get Marcus Smart, you got to be giving back a whole lot. So Rain and Jays on Twitter, hashtag Rain and Jays without the G. Bunch of Marcus Smart tweets, so let's just get to them. I'm like Mike 723, who is confirming my thing from the before. Is that back-to-back games where the guy playing Marcus Smart gets ejected? Yes, it was. At Matt Ormsby with 2 E's. Marcus Smart driving the mystery machine. You know what?
Okay. Good foreshadowing there from Matthew Ormsby.
Why don't we do that now? Let's do the mystery machine. Let's do it right now. We haven't done a mystery machine in a little bit. Jay is going to be in Chicago tomorrow night doing the podcast from there, so we won't get a chance to do that. So let's do it now. Yeah, let's just cement. We know that Marcus Smart is driving the mystery machine. He is the mystery machine. People could just hop on his back right now, and he can be the mystery machine.
That could.
and we know that Isaiah Thomas is in the mystery machine. So let's write. I mean, he's permanent fixture. He's riding shotgun in the mystery machine. So we got to pick three more guys to ride in the mystery machine. Why don't we go ahead? Why don't we let you start?
This one is, I think it's pretty obvious. It's got to be Kelly Olynyk.
Yeah, it
is. He's been playing incredibly well lately. He's been introduced this kind of sneaky attack around the rim, kind of contorting his awkward body in all sorts of different ways, but it's going in, and he's had a really positive impact, kind of in the same vein, or not in the same vein, but along the same time frame as Marcus Smart has in these past couple of games. Very good against Rudy Gobert. He's that perfect kind of mismatch. He was able to pull him out, and then he abuses the kind of smaller guards or smaller players against Dallas when they tried switching. He has just been very good lately, and the entire time playing some stellar positional defense.
I love that. I will say, okay, two more guys. I'm going to give some love. I think I know who the next two are going to be. Although I want to give Jaylen Brown some, but he got hurt. I'll go Gerald Green, because Gerald Green over the road trip had some huge, huge games and was a big catalyst. Didn't do much tonight. It didn't do anything tonight, really, but he had the bruised heel. So, but I think Gerald Green was a really, really important guy over the course of that road trip for them to go 3-1. They don't go 3-1 without Gerald Green.
No, he absolutely, we thought when Gerald Green was signed with the team that he would come in and be that guy you could, rely on, but be the guy who could come in and just kind of give you those quick moments of scoring. And he hasn't always done it, but recently in this iteration of the mystery machine voting, that he did exactly that, and he's been great. He's sipping on that hot chocolate, and with Avery Bradley out and Jay Crowder out for some of those games, they needed some sort of scoring, and he really did a great job, so I think he deserves it.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what he did. All right, you got the final vote. I think I know where this is going. I wanted to give this to you.
Ooh, that's intriguing to me. I see the first name that kind of pops out to me is James Buckets Young, Jimmy Young, because he actually had two games where he scored more than 10 points.
That's good.
I don't know. I'm looking at his game logs right now. He played like, 14, 15 minutes per game in each of those. I feel like we got to give it to him just because he's been so underproductive. Yeah. I was going to try and lean towards Al Horford for just being solidly reliable, but there's not many times where James Young actually has a legitimate chance to be on the mystery machine. And I think Dan Greenberg from Barstool would be very upset if I didn't put his baby on the Greenberg, I'm going to do it for him.
I wanted him to go last. I just knew that you were going to pick him. Al Horford does great things. You know, it does a lot of positive stuff. Al Horford, I don't know if he's a mystery machine kind of guy. I feel like Al Horford is a sensible minivan driving the speed limit in the middle lane. I'll catch up with you guys when you get there. Like, mystery machine is fun. It's goofy. Al Horford will get there when he gets there in a sensible sedan or something. Yeah, he did get a flagrant foul tonight, though, which elicited the best tweet from @CelticsBlog. Al Horford's never done anything flagrant in his life, which is hilarious to me. Okay. That's the mystery.
That was a terrible call, though.
It was. But that in today's NBA, as soon as I saw that elbow was up a little high, I was like, I had a feeling that he was going to get popped on that one. That's just that, you know, 5 years ago, that wouldn't have been a flagrant foul, but today it is. Today it is. All right, back to the Twitter, back to the Marcus Smart love. Surely we're close. Oh, this is for Matt Straight, no chaser, who's Alex with You could basically put random underscores in his Twitter name. You'll guess it. Surely we're close to coming to the simple conclusion that Marcus Smart is pretty good at basketball, right? I think kind of that's where we're going, and he's only going to get better. Ben Gates. Smart's resume should just read, "I make plays." Awesome. And
I don't think he needs a resume. I just think he kind of lets his game speak for himself.
Yeah, I think he just walks. You just walk in and just throw a basketball at you and then rip it out of your hands just to show that he could do it. I don't know.
That would be a good commercial of just Marcus Smart walking down the streets of Boston, ripping things from people's hands. I don't know what it would be for, but I just think I would be amused by it.
It'd almost be like the Marcus Smart version of the Dikembe Mutombo Geico ad.
Exactly.
Where he's just blocking everything, which is really one of the funniest ads ever. I know it's coming, but every time he slaps that box of cereal in front of the kid, it's hilarious to me. I can't not laugh out loud at that. But yeah, Marcus Smart doing stuff like that, I think it'd be great. Marcus Smart's so strong, he'd rip the ball out of the Bill Russell statue at City Hall Plaza.
Now there's a commercial idea. See, advertisers need to kind of get with us because we're ideas people. Ideas coming off us left and right. And that's why you tune into the Rating Jays for basketball analysis, but also just some stimulation, some thought-provoking ideas. And Marcus Smart commercial is right up there with some of the best of ours.
we'll work on it. You know how to find us. So, okay, today, what else came out of today? Kelly Olynyk we just put him in the mystery machine. Another great game. This stretch has really been Smart and Olynyk. Those two guys, their play has been instrumental, I think, to the Celtics' success. You know that Isaiah is going to do what he does. Now, Isaiah dropped 33 points, 3 assists, 4 rebounds, and it kind of felt ho-hum, like just another typical Isaiah game. But without Olynyk dropping 16 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, and he's sneakily shifty around the rim lately, he still looks slow. He's still weird. The up fakes are kind of, weird. But he's now finishing. He's now getting past guys. He's now getting the ball up and getting a ton of and ones. So I think Olynyk definitely deserves a little extended love after tonight's game.
Yeah, his finesse around the basket has really impressed me. And I don't know if it's just kind of his body that makes it look so awkward every single time he does it. But he's been really good. The play that sticks out to me the most is that Isaiah had that one-handed assist in the Dallas game where he kind of caught it while running and did a little 180 in midair high off the glass for the and one. It feels like he's been doing a lot of that tonight. And the pump fake is working. It's really getting people up in the air and allowing him to kind of penetrate and get to the basket. So for all the kind of criticism we gave him for the pump fake earlier in the season, he definitely deserved it because it wasn't working then, but now it is. So he was playing the long game. Maybe a little craftier than we thought he was.
Well, when you're taking threes aggressively, and I think this is the biggest difference in his game, he's taking threes aggressively, much more aggressively than he has for much of the season and, hell, much of his career. But this stretch here is mirroring the pre-All-Star stretch that he had last season before he got hurt when everybody was talking about him getting into the three-point contest, and he had that big stretch there. He was just going off and hitting a ton. And so maybe Kelly Olynyk just needs 50 games to get going. I don't know what it is, but that pre-All-Star stretch is Kelly Olynyk time, apparently. It's the second straight year he's had it, and when you can hit at that level and be a really, really big threat from three, at that point, yeah, the up fake is going to mean something because guys don't want you to hit that three and they'll over-aggressively close out and you can do that slow motion drive to the basket that he does.
Yeah, no, it's impressive, and maybe it's just as simple as he's finally felt comfortable after coming back from the shoulder injury. But you're right. It's the aggressiveness when catching the ball and open at the top of the arc, which has really been a, kind of the catalyst for changing everything. I was actually looking at just stats for the Celtics the other day. You know, Kelly Olynyk is shooting somewhere close to like 65 or 70% on corner threes.
I did not know that. That's insane.
I got to double check that because that, like, just when I said it, it sounded absolutely absurd. But he's definitely leading the team and shooting an absurd percentage for corner threes. And I can't remember him taking a lot of them, but I was very shocked to see that number. So I'm going to.
Well, I will say, and let me go because I see it. There was a graphic that Comcast Sportsnet put up. Yep. He came into the game 16 of 24 on corner threes, the NBA leader in corner threes. So, and the Celtics
are 70%, 69.6%, which is nice.
That's
fantastic stuff.
That's pretty good. So, and he's tied for fourth most 3-point field goals by a 7-footer in NBA history, which says, I mean, that's probably pretty recent phenomenon. So I'll kind of let that go. But yeah, shooting about 70% from the corner is pretty sick because a lot of guys don't shoot that at the rim. So, you know, a few weeks ago we did the superlative show, the midseason superlative show, and I said that Kelly Olynyk is most likely to have people kind of upset if he leaves by the end of the season. And this is what we were this is what I was talking about. That coming off of that shoulder injury, it took him a lot longer to kind of get going. And now he's kind of found himself. He's found this groove. And this is a guy that's really super important to this team. And as much as people can say they hate Kelly Olynyk, but here's the stat. When Kelly Olynyk scores 10-plus points, the Celtics are 17-3. That means he is being aggressive, and just having the threat of him out there opens things up so much. Now the question becomes, are the Celtics willing to give up Kelly Olynyk for the cap space over the summer? And this performance, this type of performance from Olynyk has to give Danny Ainge pause, because Olynyk has to go if the Celtics are going to open up that 30% of the cap for a megastar. But is that megastar going to take away a key guy like Olynyk coming off the bench, or even if he ends up starting, whatever ends up happening down the road? Don't you think that they might have to really think long and hard about this and tender him the qualifying offer and maybe go a different direction?
I think the problem with Olynyk is that even if they want to keep him, some other team is probably going to give him a pretty big offer in restricted free agency. Just because if you think about kind of bigs who were acquired recently, it hasn't really worked out for a lot of teams. And I think there's a lot of value in a person or a 7-footer who can shoot like that. And think about it, like Andrew Bogut, Biombo, who's the dumb, big, dumb Russian guy the Lakers signed, Mozgov, Joakim Noah. It feels like there's the bigs in this league are – there's kind of a – there's a lot of them, but a lot of them are underperforming. And I feel like there's like 17 Plumleys and 18 Zellers. And so – there's a quality, like a dearth of like quality big. So I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if some team gave him some sort of outrageous offer in restricted free agency that the Celtics would kind of just be unwilling to match. One, just because they might want to keep space open for a superstar, but two, it just might be too much for Kelly Olynyk, considering that they are going to have Isaiah Avery and Marcus Smart coming up the following season. So that would be my big concern, is that he's playing almost too well.
I can totally see that. And look, Danny Ainge, I'm sure, has a number that he's willing to pay, and maybe he's willing to bite the bullet if a team comes up, because that's what you got to do to get a free agent, a restricted free agent especially. You have to overpay them to get them to sign that offer. But it's entirely possible that they could lose him, and I'm questioning whether last year's bigs, that all those guys that you rattled off, I don't think that's a normal thing. I think the way last year played out, it was more aberration than market setting. Usually when there's a flurry of signings and a guy gets money, more money than you think, that tends to set the market for guys of that ability. But I think last year's money was so stupid. The jump in the cap space was so unique that teams made overly aggressive mistakes, and I think they'll be seen as mistakes and not necessarily the baseline. Like, I don't think Mozgov's contract is going to be the baseline, and then people who are better than Mozgov are going to get paid more than him. I think most teams will look at that and say, that was a stupid thing that happened in a weird year. We're not using that in our calculation of what a guy's worth. But Kelly Olynyk's going to be worth a lot of money. He is going to get a significant raise this year, and he's going to... the question is, how big of that a raise is he going to get? And how aggressive are some teams going to be? He's got the skill set that most teams are looking for, especially if he's willing to come off the bench long term. He's a guy that has the potential to change games just by spacing the floor. So we'll see what happens with Olynyk in free agency. That's going to be an interesting one, but it's going to see... I think another thing that it changes is if a team is willing to trade for him now, and like I was saying before, is Marcus Smart's value rising? Is a deal that includes one of those guys, does it take away throwing somebody else in? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you trade for star X, you say, well, here's Marcus Smart. And they say, no, we're going to need more. And you'd be like, no, you're getting 22-year-old Marcus Smart. That's enough. You're getting Kelly Olynyk, who's, you know, what is he, 23, 24? That's enough. You know, I wonder if these guys' value is rising to a point where the throw-ins aren't going to be as necessary, or their value is going to be so high that the Celtics will be able to keep some more of these assets. Or maybe they just don't trade them. I'm not saying that, you know what I mean. It's the next week is going to be so weird, and those are going to be two guys that teams are going to be asking for.
At this point, if you're the Celtics, do you really make a trade considering how well the team has been playing over the past, really, 2 months? Like, it feels – that was one of my biggest kind of reactions to the weird Ibaka-Rozier outrage, is that just like – People felt like wanted to make a trade for the sake of making a trade, but this team has been playing great basketball. What have they won? 10 of their last 11, and before that, just going through an insane stretch. It feels like it'd be odd to make a kind of shift mid-season, and it would be difficult to, like people say, maybe go out there and get someone like Jimmy Butler. And I'm for the idea of Jimmy Butler, but how difficult would it be to kind of integrate a star like that into the lineup mid-year? If anyone can do it, it's Brad Stevens, because in his first couple of seasons, he had, what, like 35 players in the course of the first 2 years. But it just it feels like it would be a difficult kind of thing to throw off team chemistry, when it feels like they're really clicking right now. So I don't know if the Celtics, given how well they're playing, are going to make any deals coming up on the deadline.
Well, this all depends on your opinion of where this team is developmentally. I continue to say that this team is not a finished product. That as well as they're playing, let's not get tonight twisted. They didn't play great tonight. There were stretches there where I thought they were playing simultaneously good and terrible, which is weird, but they shot awesome. They shot 46.5% from three. I mean, that's really what won the game for them. But because they turned the ball over 24 times and 34 points off of those turnovers. They gave up 62 points in the paint. That's insane, that number. 62 points in the paint, 34 points off of 24 turnovers, 26ers second chance points, 25 fast break points. They did a lot to try to lose this game. They didn't play great. They shot great, and they finished great, and Marcus Smart willed them to a win with some really good play down the stretch and in the second half. But there are deficiencies, and like you wrote in the notes, they don't have that blowout ability. They're not out there taking these 10-point third-quarter leads and running away with it, which is where you want the team to be. If they're playing that great, you want a team to take some of those 10-point leads and not give them up and have to rely on Isaiah Thomas so often in the last few minutes of a game. So that said, I've never considered this team a finals contender this year or a championship contender. And yeah, they're playing great, and we'll see how everything goes when Avery Bradley comes back and everybody's healthy, and see what luck befalls the other teams. Kevin Love is out, like we talked about in the show last night. We'll see what Toronto, how they play with Ibaka, and once they're all fully healthy and ready to go. So yeah, I think they do explore a trade, just because Danny Ainge, I'm sure, doesn't see this team as a finished product either. I'm sure he wants another star. The question really becomes, do you see this team as good enough to get to a point where they draft that star, and in a couple of years they'll kind of have that third star organically, or do they need to start making some moves and get another star player in and go that route? I still think the Celtics might need to make a move. Maybe it's not in season. Maybe they don't blow their assets in season, but I think that's the case. But some people definitely think that they're so close that you just need to make a move now to fix the rebounding and just make a couple of little minor tweaks and do something like Toronto did, and that's good enough. So I guess it depends on where you fall or where Danny Ainge falls. So,
yeah, no, I think they're definitely not the perfect team right now, but I think it's much harder to make that little tweak than it is. It feels like they've been accumulating all these assets to go get a star like Jimmy Butler, like Paul George, and those type of deals happen in the summer around draft time. And that's what I feel like they're building towards, and that's what they've always been building towards. And it feels less likely for them to make the smaller in-season tweak when they know that it could ruin a potential larger deal down the line. So what I would expect is the Celtics to kind of push forward with what they have. You kind of expect Brad Stevens, as he's done throughout his career in Boston, as his teams continue to get better as the season progresses. They had a real issue with their defense. It was almost 10 games ago, but ever since then, they've kind of locked it up on the defensive end. So I still expect the team to have its own kind of internal improvement. So I think that's the kind of what you're riding with going into the playoffs, is just hoping that they can kind of coach them up, improve that way. And then if there's going to be a blockbuster, if there's going to be fireworks — it's been a while since we used that term — it's going to happen in the summer.
Yeah, I really don't know how it's going to go. You never know with Danny Ainge how it's going to go, but we'll just have to wait and see. Now that Ibaka is gone and that Nurkic is gone, who knows if teams are going to start shaking loose some of these other secondary stars, or if Orlando is going to have a bigger fire sale, or if another team's just going to be motivated to say, well, Toronto's doing this, we might as well just not compete. I don't know. What's Detroit going to do? Is Detroit going to hang on to their pieces? You know, there are names in Detroit that I've heard might be coming loose. What's Phoenix going to do? There are some good players there. Are they going to take the star? They have enough to take potentially a star away from Boston. Is Boston going to have to readjust? So many variables in the next week. So however it goes, we're going to be here for you. Celtics, still 2.5 games out of first. The Cleveland Cavaliers won tonight. Let's see. There was a Toronto play tonight. Let's take a look at that. They beat Charlotte. So they stay seven games out of first, which is, four and a half games behind Boston. That is a healthy lead over the Raptors.
Don't worry, the savior Serge Ibaka is coming, and he's going to totally change their season around.
Yeah, I really do like what he's going to do for them, but that's a big lead. And if the Celtics have to lose a bunch for the Wizards for the Raptors to make up that ground, so Atlanta is tied with Toronto. They play the Clippers, so they haven't played as of this recording, or actually they're starting to play as of this recording. So Celtics are in a really good position. They play the Bulls tomorrow night. We'll see how that goes for them and see if they can increase their lead. It's Washington plays tomorrow, two games, Washington, Indy, and then us and Boston and Chicago. So the Celtics have a chance to go two games behind the Cavaliers, and if Washington loses, they would be four games behind Boston. So Celtics separating themselves a little bit going into the All-Star break, that would be a best case scenario. So root for Indy, unless you're like me and you're rooting for a Paul George trade, in which case just root for Indy to completely fall apart. Whatever. All right, that's the show. Thanks for listening. We got that mystery machine out there. Thanks for Sam Jam Packard for stepping in tonight. Thanks to you for subscribing, for rating us 5 stars. If you haven't subscribed, search for us, Locked On Celtics. We've got a few new listeners. People have tweeted us and said they're just joining the show, have just started subscribing over this past week. Thank you very much for doing so. Really appreciate that. We're hoping that you are enjoying the show. If not, tweet us. Give us suggestions. We'll take them. We'll listen to them. And if you've subscribed and you haven't rated us 5 stars, please do so. That helps get the word out, gets new people involved, helps us rise in the rankings, and all of that stuff. Celtics win. They beat the Sixers in a game that wasn't pretty, but it was pretty enough. We'll talk to you next time here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.